We welcome you in to the Gardener's Corner program, a Friday feature here on Radio Roxborough. Rob Hall with you. Our special guest today is Mr. Johnny Coley of the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Service. Johnny is the horticultural agent for Person and Granville Counties. Good morning, Johnny. How are you today?
Doing well. Hope you are.
Doing fine. Glad to have you with us. We are brought to you today by T.G. Brooks Company, Sandling Golf Cars and Trailers, the Granville Hunt Farm right there on Highway 15. They have a drive-through, more or less haunted trail, so to speak. We'll tell you all about that. And we'll share some information with you about an auction that Jason Acock Auctioneering is having coming up on Saturday, October 30th. Anyway, we're just glad to have you tuned in to this edition of the Gardener's Corner program. Johnny Coley, how you doing?
Doing good, my friend, doing good. Just nice. I thought it was going to be a sunny day. Now it's clouded back up, Rob. And we were just talking about before we started the rain situation a little bit. You said you maybe got a sprinkle over there. We did about the same here, and we did get a surprise shower last Saturday, about 0.2 inches. But understand, a lot of Person County didn't get any of that. I was talking to a grower yesterday and said he's getting a little dry, but it is. September, October are normally the two driest months of the year. The only thing that would cause that to be different would be a tropical system, and we don't usually want those to. That usually gives us too much rain, so we can get 5 or 6 inches in a short period of time if we have a tropical system come through. But we could always. Seems like we could always use rain, or wish it would stop raining.
we're one or the other. We're never satisfied, right?
it doesn't seem like it. Sure enough.
Well, you know, Johnny, here it is, the 22nd day of October, and we haven't had any frost as of yet. And I'm looking at the 7-day weather forecast. And I think Saturday night we get down to about 45, and just, you know, of course the weather, you know, changes, you know, quite often. But that is about the lowest that we will be for the next week or so. And, you know, typically in this area of the Piedmont, when we get somewhere around the 15th of October, our chances of frost rapidly increase. And I know there's still some farmers that have tobacco, you know, that they have not been able to get in the barn due to, you know, not having enough, you know, barn capacity. So maybe the weather will work out for them. But here it is. Well, a little bit more than 1 month left to where you can turn your soil samples in, and they will test them for free after Thanksgiving, pretty much December 1st until the end of March. That $4 per sample fee will be in effect, correct?
Yes, sir. Yep, that goes into effect. Usually we recommend people get them to the office by Thanksgiving, get them there by the week of Thanksgiving. Office will be open Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of that week. And if you can get them to us by then, it'll give us a better chance to get them over to the lab, because we need to make sure we get them over there by the end of November. So, and $4, you know, is not a lot unless you've got several samples, and it can add up, pretty quick. But if you only have one or two samples, it's well worth the price. Some states charge $25, $40 year round. So it is a service. There are products that are taxed to allow this. Fertilizers, for instance, will have an added amount on it in North Carolina. So it's paid for in different ways. But the lab is still able to do this. And the reason there's a $4 charge during those months, Rob, is that's the highest volume time. So they try to get homeowners to send theirs in during the off-peak time, because the farmers have to send theirs in, when they need to do it in order to get ready for the next season, after they've harvested their crops in the fall. So, that is a higher time. But still, like I said, $4. If you only have, even three or four samples, it's not too bad to bring, get them in. But it's still have plenty of time to do it now. And you can, you ask, we'll do a sample now, and I'm not going to fertilize or do my vegetable garden until next spring. It's not going to change a lot, and it would give you a chance to put out some lime if needed, and have that effective before you plant next spring. If you do a soil sample in March and you're planting in April and you need to raise your pH or adjust your pH in any way, you're not going to have much time to do that. So it gives you a chance to go ahead and get some amendment in there if you need to ahead of time and get it started. Even phosphorus and potassium doesn't go through the soil very quickly. It takes a little while for that to be utilized or be available in the soil. Nitrogen's something you don't want to put nitrogen out ahead of time, because it's used up pretty quickly. It goes to the soil and the plants pretty quickly. But get your soil samples in, and so you'll know what to apply to your vegetable gardens next spring. It's hard to believe. I was talking yesterday or the day before, and February is only 4 months away. It's, we think about next year being a long ways away, but here we are in October, and we'll be in February before we know it.
We sure will. If you want to collect your soil samples, you need to go between 5 and 6 inches down, get a sample of soil, and depending how big of an area that you're doing, a soil sample for, you may need, if it's a huge field, you may want to kind of mark it off in sections. But if it's a little garden spot, typically, one soil sample will be sufficient. But what you need to do is the soil that you collect it from, several different areas and kind of mix it up and make sure that it is just free of any, debris, little gravels, rocks, or whatever. And you can put it in a Ziploc bag and turn it into the local cooperative extension service office. And they have a little cardboard box. They only need like 8 ounces to do a sample, but they will ask you a few questions about, what you're going to be planting and all this stuff. And that way, they can send you the results. And when they send you the results, they're sometimes not the easiest to decipher. But if you talk to one of the county agents or anybody at some of these feed and fertilizer stores, they can help you decipher, the meaning of your soil sample results. But, Johnny, one thing I want to ask you about, you had mentioned that one thing you wanted to talk about was pretty much amending the soil. But I have this question. A lot of people, maybe still have some vegetable garden, coming in. Now, is it a good idea before they till and plow the garden up, is it a good idea to remove all of the vegetation off of the garden, or is it suggested just to till it up into the soil?
Well, Rob, it depends. It's never a simple answer. And if, as long as your plants haven't had any severe disease pressure through the year, through the summer and fall, it's fine to just tear that, turn that vegetation under, let it decay. If it's real heavy stalks, corn, for instance, corn's going to take a little longer to decay and turn into the compost. But it's fine to do that. You just might need to run over it a couple more times to get it in smaller pieces so it will decay in plenty of time to replant in that space next year. But if you have any real heavy diseased plants, any heavy diseased areas in your garden, it's better to remove those plants, just get rid of them, put them in a plastic bag, and just dispose of those. And that way you're not setting yourself up for that same disease next year. Of course, it's best to rotate from that area. If you have cucumbers or squash, any of the cucurbits, you want to plant something else there the following year. That helps with the disease pressure. But a lot of times people have a very small garden. They can't move it but so far away. So if you have any heavy diseased area or heavy diseased plants, let's go ahead and remove those before tilling the garden up. But overall, it would be a good idea. You know, as long as that would be the only reason I would say not to, is if you had some plants that were diseased and didn't want to just, you know, have that disease sitting there and just ready to jump on the plants the following year. So that goes for leaves as well. It's a good time where leaves are beginning to fall. I was talking to a gentleman, and he said he was, a few years ago he had the idea, or at some point he had the idea that he was going to let all the leaves fall, and then he was going to get them up, just do them one time. And he said he'd never make that mistake again, because it's better to get the leaves up in stages than to wait because they all fall, because that's a big job if you have a lot of hardwoods in your yard that are going to be dropping the leaves. But if you have a tree, bacterial leaf spot is something that gets on the oak trees, and if you have some disease issues with some of the leaves, that's another case that you would get those leaves up and maybe not compost them. Not saying that you can get every leaf that has any disease on out of your compost. You're not going to do that, because maples get diseases as well. But if you know the tree was very severely affected by a disease or something that got on it this year, then rake those up and just sort of try to get rid of them rather than composting them and having that disease, because you're not going to rotate the trees in your yard. They're going to be right there next year, and if that disease is close by, it'll just jump right back on, and it's good just to get rid of them.
Well, now, Johnny, when you had mentioned something about amending the soil, what exactly are you talking about?
Well, it's a good time to plant trees and shrubs. This is the time of year, I think I mentioned a few weeks back, it's time to start scouting and seeing what you wanted to plant. Well, now we need to go get those plants and start putting them in the ground. And it's always a dilemma of how much do you amend the soil or the area that you're going to plant your trees and shrubs. And it depends a lot on the type of soil you have. I mean, most of our soils, you don't dig too deeply. Even if you have some topsoil on top, you don't dig too far down before you're going to hit a clay base. You're going to get into a clay area, and it depends on the size container or size plant that you're planting. But you'd want to amend as large of area as you can. And that, by amending, I mean adding some organic matter to it, but no more than, I never recommend any more than 25%, probably 20-25% amendment, even in a heavy clay soil. If you have a loamy soil, or if you have nice organic matter in your soil, and even if you hit some of that clay, you mix some of that other soil with it, it's amended well enough. You don't want to make a nice, perfect environment for that root system, and it gets very comfortable where it is, and then all of a sudden it hits that native soil, and it says, "Hey, I'm not gonna, I'm happy where I am. I don't need to go into that other soil." And you can create an area or a plant that doesn't have the root system that it needs to have. So you can't really dig your hole too big. There's no such thing as too big a hole. And you know, if you've got a 3 gallon container, a 3 gallon container is probably your most popular container, and usually they're about 12 inches across. And so if you can dig a hole that's 3 feet across, 36 inches, go, you know, three times the size of that container, that's a good size. You know, it's really recommended to just amend the whole area that you're going to plant the plant in. I've seen Dr. Fair, a professor over at NC State, that does a lot of work with ornamentals and the cultural aspect of ornamentals, and the holes that you know are dug for plants that she plants are huge. I don't know who dug the hole, but the heavier the clay, of course, it's not fun to dig that hole. But if you know, the bigger the area, the better. Don't amend more than 20 to 25%. Don't add more than 20 or 25% amendment to the area that you're planting. You don't want to, you know, just half native soil, half amendment. You don't need that. You don't need to put that much. You just need to mix that heavy clay soil. Just mix it in with the soil conditioner, topsoil, whatever type of amendment you're using. Compost, you know, leaf compost is a great amendment. And you know, that's sufficient. But if it's a nice loamy soil and you're not, you know, don't have a lot of heavy clay, you don't have a lot of rocks and rocks are not bad. They help with drainage as long as the soil is a nice loamy soil. But the heavy clay soils is what we need to amend, and amend as large of area as you can. Yes, it's the takeaway as far as amending soils.
So some good information right there. And even though it is fall time of the year, you may want to just kind of start thinking about your vegetable garden that you had planted this year. And you say, well, you know, maybe next year I want to plant a few more string beans, or want to plant a little bit more sweet corn, or maybe don't want to plant quite as much of this or that. And if you have planted your tomatoes in the same spot for several years, if you could, it'd probably be a good idea to find a new spot to plant your tomatoes, and let that spot where you've planted tomatoes at several years kind of, you know, rest. You can plant other stuff on it, but just don't plant the tomatoes, because sometimes tomatoes, you know, those plants get some disease, and they can have that disease transferred from one year to the next. Right, Johnny?
That's right. That's right. You definitely, if you can rotate, that's the best. And I realize that a lot of people have an area that is hard to rotate in. I've had, you know, people ask me, so I got a raised bed. You know, if you got a 12 by 12 raised bed, it's hard to rotate in it. But, you know, it would be best. And, you know, certain diseases affect certain plants worse than others. But even, you know, changing variety, if you do have to put the tomatoes in, you know, changing variety, because certain varieties are more resistant to certain diseases than others. So, you know, that might give you a little bit of a heads up or a head start as well. And you mentioned planning for next year on your vegetable garden. It wouldn't be a bad idea to go ahead and start maybe looking for the seeds and trying to get those seeds ordered. I know it's way early, but if you get them and just keep them in the refrigerator, they should be fine. Because we had a master gardener meeting yesterday, and one of the gentlemen in the master gardener said that he was already sort of looking, and it may be I don't want to cause a panic by any means, because I don't think at this point we're a shortage on seed. But if you have a particular variety that you're looking for, you might want to go ahead and try to get that in your hands, and just put it in the refrigerator. It'll be fine till next year. The only thing I wouldn't probably recommend doing that with is corn. Corn doesn't store as a seed as well as some things do. But just and not saying you have to do it this afternoon, but just earlier, you know, maybe January, February, start getting those seeds and getting a place that you can find those seeds that you want if there are certain particular varieties that you do want.
All righty, some good advice. We need to take a break, but before we go to break, I want to make mention that Person County 4-H is thinking about starting a livestock club, and if you have a child that's between the age of 5 and 18, as of January 1st of this year, that's maybe interested in livestock, you may want to check this meeting out. It will be on Tuesday, November the 9th at 6 p.m. And if you do want to become a part of the Person County 4-H Livestock Club, again, this is just an interest meeting. You don't necessarily, you know, have to own livestock. You know, it's not a requirement. But if you go to the Person County 4-H Facebook page, there is a link that you can click on to RSVP to attend that meeting. Again, that will be Tuesday, November 9th at 6 p.m. Now, if you do not have access to the internet, you can call Michelle Van Ness at 336-599-1195. That is the number to the Person County office. And just let her know that you would like to attend the meeting, you and your child, and go from there. But Person County 4-H has a lot to offer to youth between the ages of 5 and 18. We're going to take a trip at the T.G. Brooks Company, and we'll be back right after this message.
The leaves are falling. It's October 2021. Fall season is in full spring with warmer days and cooler nights. It's still time to plant your turnip seeds and kale, mustard, collards, and broccoli. More importantly, it's time to sow the yard and do fall planting. There is no better time of the year to reseed and to feed your lawn. T.G. Brooks Company has plenty of advice and plenty of supplies, too. Enrich your yard with nutrients such as lime, fertilizer, grass seed, including the new Top Choice Turf grass seed for greener and plusher lawns. Many people have been to T.G. Brooks Company and picked up or had delivered beautiful mulch, including some of the triple ground mulch, and they have mulch in several colors. It's also time to do some raking and stay ahead of the leaves. Get your lawn rakes and your tools to do the work. No matter if you are the individual homeowner or you are the professional landscaper, T.G. Brooks gives the same courteous attention to everybody. Fall and this time of the year is also the time to check over your stovepipe needs and fitting needs. Also have your replacement parts for your Taylor wood stoves, like blowers, anode rods, rust inhibitor chemicals, and pumps. Next month, we'll be celebrating Thanksgiving. After that, remember T.G. Brooks for exciting Christmas gifts, which will be coming in sooner than you can imagine. Keep in mind, T.G. Brooks will have your Thanksgiving and Christmas delicious country hams. Hey, plan to do your shopping list from cast iron cookware to case pocket knives, from your grocery needs, from plumbing supplies to electrical supplies. They have it and have plenty of advice, especially for lawn and garden. T.G. Brooks Company, thanking you for your business and looking forward to serving you. Phone 364-2428.
And that's exactly right. It's not going to be long before you're going to be warning one of those famous T.G. Brooks country hams for, you know, maybe Thanksgiving, Christmas, and on into the new year. It's the Gardener's Corner program. Mr. Johnny Coley is our guest from the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Service. Johnny divides his time between Person and Granville County as the horticultural agent. Johnny, today, gathering by way of Zoom, and it may be some people that's attending in person, a natural resource series of getting to know your land. Now, this actually started back on October 1st. Well, looking at it, it's not one today. It's going to be a session next Friday, the 29th. So no session today. They have one on the 1st, one on the 15th, and the next one will be next Friday, the 29th. Then they will have one on November the 19th and December 3rd and December 17th. If you would, could you tell us a little bit of information about this series of workshops?
We put this together, Rob, with the Forest Service, and Paul McKenzie, the Vance and Warren County horticulture agent, and myself. Put this together as a series, just trying to hit some topics that people are interested in. We covered plant ID early on, just some native plant ID, and how to tell the different native plants. And then last week we had a pond management class, and you mentioned either in face or on Zoom. These are actually all face to face. We've gone all face to face.
Okay, well, good.
We're trying to have venues that are outside, or at least open spaces that people will feel comfortable, being face to face with. We've had a good turnout at the last two. Next week we're going to do pasture management, and the livestock agent for Granville and Person, Kim Woods. And also the livestock agent for Warren County, Matthew Place, is going to help us out with that next week. That is going to be at the Granville County. It's not the office, but it's on the same grounds that the office is on. It's actually the Granville County Forest, North Carolina Forest Service is going to have it at their place, which is right behind our office in Granville County now. So we're gonna have the a classroom part, and then we'll go out into an area right behind right to the side of the Forest Service that we'll look at how to talk about rotational grazing and some aspects of pasture management. But looking forward to that, and then on the 19th we'll have the woodlot management and chainsaw safety. That is on the 19th. All of these are on Fridays from 2 to 4, 2 o'clock in the afternoon to 4 in the afternoon, and each of them are on a Friday afternoon. We're also, on the 19th, we'll talk about chainsaw safety. And the woodlot management is for small woodlots, no matter what size you have, whether it's an acre, whether it's half acre of woodlot. You need to know a little bit about the ins and outs of managing it, what are noxious weeds you need to be careful about trying to eradicate or control in that space, what trees do you want to keep, what trees do you want to take out, what's your purpose of having that woodlot. So it's a lot of different things to think about, no matter what size woodlot, whether it's, like I said, half acre or whether it's 20 acres or more. We'll talk about that, and then of course the chainsaw safety is always a good thing. You need to know the proper way to proper and safe way to operate a chainsaw. And then the forestry field day on December 3rd and December 17th, we'll mention that as we move forward on those two. As I mentioned, next week's will be at the right there. at the office, right behind the office in Oxford, and then the following week, November 19th, we had to skip out a little bit on the next one. We'll be at the Expo Center in Granville County. Tried to keep it sort of localized, sort of centralized for Warren, Vance, Granville, and Person counties. The agents within those counties are the ones trying to collaborate together with this. So it's a great series. I think, like I said, it's been well attended so far, and hopefully people will come out next week. If you have any questions or any pasture land that you have, you know, feel free to come out, and you know, Kim and Matthew will do a great job of explaining how to manage pastures. I learned a long time ago, Rob, you know, I've got a few cows, and you know, taking care of the cows are not that big a problem, but managing the pasture, that's tough. You know, you gotta rotate, you gotta have grass, hopefully, or forage for those animals when you move them into a different pasture. And you know, fertility management, you know, weed control within your pastures, it's a lot of, you know, a lot of things to think about. And the pasture management takes a lot more time and energy than the cow management part. You know, the cows are going to calf, and the cows are going to need vaccinating, things like that. But the pastures need something all the time, and it really is an important part of raising livestock. So looking forward to that next week.
And you know, the pasture, I guess, is, you know, the lifeline, in a sense, of the cattle. And so if you can keep your pasture in good shape, that means that your cattle, you know, have a big opportunity of being, you know, in good shape. Johnny, someone just called in a question, and they are wanting to know, if you burn leaves, is it good to take the ashes from where you have burned the leaves and put them on the garden spot?
It is fine to do that. I have not read or heard of any reason, even the diseased leaves, once they've been burned, that disease shouldn't be there once they've gone through that fire. So you would be okay to do that. There, potash or ashes from a wood stove or leaves that you burned, on average, have about 20% calcium. Calcium is the product or the nutrient or element in lime that raises your pH. It raises your pH. So just keeping that in mind when you put out your ashes, you don't want to put too much ash into your garden. If your pH is about a 6.2, 6.3, that's a good range for your garden. On up to 6.8, really, but you don't want to put too much of it in and affect your pH, because that's what it's going to mainly do. Now, it does have some potassium in it as well, again, on average, and it's, you know, you have to take averages on this, but about 4% potassium. So that it is a good potassium source, but it is also going to affect your pH by raising your pH by putting out ashes. So it's fine. You're probably not going to have that much ash to be too badly affecting your garden. But that is just something to keep in mind, that if you do a soil test and your pH is good, just be careful how much of that ash you put out there. And that goes for wood stoves as well. You know, if it's good to use those ash on the garden, but just be careful and not get too much on it and affect your pH. So that's my only concern there. But otherwise, yeah, that's a great use of those ashes for the one in the garden.
Okay. Hopefully that caller can go ahead and, incorporate those ashes into the soil, but you know, you just need to do a soil sample if you do a lot of that, so just bear that in mind. We need to get a word on for Sandling Golf Cars and Trailers and Granville Hunt Farm. Sandling Golf Cars and Trailers is located 613 Lewis Street in Oxford. Open for business weekdays 8 to 5, Saturdays 9 till 1. Call 1-800-221-9267 or 919-693-4626. Al, Hillary, and Will, there to serve you with all of your golf car needs. They have club car, Easy Go, and Yamaha units. If you're wanting a gasoline or an electric golf car, they have them at Sandling Golf Cars and Trailers. Trojan Batteries, Parts, and Repair Service. Thinking about a new grill? Check out the Wilmington Grills at Sandling Golf Cars and Trailers. Speaking of trailers, they have utility, dump, enclosed, stock, and equipment trailers. That's Sandling Golf Cars and Trailers in Oxford, 919-693-4626, toll free, 1-800-221-9267. Sandling Golf Cars and Trailers.
It's almost time, kids. The clock is ticking. Be at Granville Haunt Farm for the drive-through drive-in every Friday and Saturday in October. And remember, we'll be open on Halloween, too. Don't miss it. And don't forget to wear your masks. The clock is ticking. It's almost time.
Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Granville Haunt Farm.
Granville Haunt Farm. It's located 4534 US 15 in Oxford, 1 mile south of Interstate 85. Call 919-339-4474 or visit their website and like Granville Haunt Farm on Facebook. Granville Haunt Farm, 919-339-4474.
We're back on the Gardener's Corner program. Johnny Coley, the horticultural agent of Person in Granville County, is our guest. And, Johnny, let's talk a little bit about, if you don't mind, the residual effects of herbicides.
Yeah, Rob, just something to keep in mind whenever you're using a compost or getting a compost from a source of any kind, especially if you're going to a farm and getting compost, if it's composted cow manure or something. You might want to check with that that grower and see what they have sprayed to control weeds. There are some herbicides out there. I can't remember the exact scientific name, but I think Grazon Next is one of the trade names that you have to be careful about if they've sprayed. But it has a long residual. I mean, it's great pasture management with weeds and everything, but you do have to be careful with the compost or the manure that you use from that from cows that have grazed on those pastures, because that residual can still be in that manure, that compost, and affect your plants adversely even the following year after it's been composted. That just doesn't break down very quickly, and I'll be honest, I don't know what length of time would be safe after that product has been used, what the breakdown time is, but just something to be aware of if you are going to use it in your garden or even putting it around your plants as an amendment when you plant your woody ornamentals. Just know that some of those herbicides can stay in the the ecosystem, if you will, usually sort of a loose term there, but because even when it goes through the cows and it's broken down, it can still be in that that manure from the cows that for quite a while. So just keeping that in mind, even with it's mixed in with the hay and all that, and even hay that's been baled from areas that have been sprayed, hay fields that have been sprayed with that particular herbicide can. And there's more than just that one, but just be careful with that. Even in the summer, springtime, a lot of times people will early spring will spray their lawns with a herbicide, a broadleaf herbicide, and it doesn't kill the grass. And you take those grass clippings that you've applied that herbicide to. And you compost that, or you put that in your garden. Some people will put their grass clippings in their garden and use it for a mulch. But if you use that a broadleaf herbicide, and that's getting away from the pasture that I was talking about, even a short period of time, product like 2,4-D might still be in there. That usually breaks down a little bit quicker than some of your more conventional herbicides, but. Just be careful with composting or using a compost material that has had a broadleaf herbicide applied to it. I'm not talking about glyphosate. Glyphosate breaks down pretty quickly once it hits the soil, especially if it has any clay in it at all, which most of our soils around here is going to have that. That breaks down very quickly. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about more of the broadleaf herbicides that would stay in the soil longer. So it's just a caution that a lot of people are composting this time of year. They're putting mulch or amending their soils. Just something to be aware of and know your source of where you're getting it from.
All righty. We need to get a word on for Jason Aycock Auctioneering. Jason is hosting an auction next Saturday, the 30th, in the Whitakers area of North Carolina. It's the estate of Jerry Mott, who is deceased. Here's more information, and we'll be back with Johnny Coley right after this. Jason Aycock, Auctioneering, NCAL 8621, announces the estate auction for Jerry Mott, who is deceased, to be held Saturday, October the 30th at 10 a.m. at 3681 Lonesome Pine Road in Whitakers, North Carolina. For more information, terms, and to view photographs of items up for auction, log on to jasonaycockauctioneering.com. You can also call Jason at 919-495-0285. No buyer's premium will be charged. Up for auction, house and lot, shop tools, lawnmower, and much more. That's Saturday, October the 30th at 10 a.m. Sale location 3681 Lonesome Pine Road in Whitakers, North Carolina. Call Jason at 919-495-0285 or log on to jasonaycockauctioneering.com.
We do appreciate all of our sponsors on the Gardener's Corner program.
Johnny, we hadn't got a lot of time left, not quite 5 minutes, but a couple of things. Could you address sweet potato curing sweet potato, to where they'll last a long time? I sure would say that easy. And also, it's a good idea to start scouting plants that you're going to bring in your house for insects, right?
It is. And we'll talk about sweet potatoes right quick. And a lot of people have already probably harvested their sweet potatoes, or it's getting time to do it if you haven't already done it. But curing those sweet potatoes help them last longer. And not saying it's an easy process, because if you don't have a way to control the temperature and control the environment that you have them in, it's sort of hard to do. But in order to get the best shelf life on your sweet potatoes, it's best to hold them for about 85 degrees at a 90 to 95% relative humidity for 4 to 7 days. Now that's fairly particular, I understand, but that is what was recommended for about a 4 to 7 day period to hold them at that 85 degrees and that humidity. Humidity is usually not an issue for us. Of course, this time of year we do fluctuate week to week just about with that. And after that, you want to keep them at about a 55 to 60 degrees. So after you've cured them, after they've gone through that curing process of 4 to 7 days, keeping them at a 55 to 60 degree temperature is best. If it gets much below 50, they start deteriorating pretty quickly, and even at the 50 temperature mark, if they're held there very long, they'll start declining. So, you know, getting them up to 55, if they get much above 60, they're going to start sprouting. So if you have an area or space that you can store them in at 55 to 60 degrees, you definitely don't want to put them, you know, in a refrigerator or anything like that, and don't get them too warm, else they'll start sprouting on you. But that's just a little information on curing the sweet potatoes. And as far as houseplants go, a lot of times this time of year, we mentioned frost earlier in the program, Rob, and we're on borrowed time on our frost date. So if you're going to bring your plants in before the frost, just make sure you scout them. Make sure you look at the leaves and make sure you don't have any insects. Easier to take care of those insect problems before you bring them in. It's easier to spray for aphids, for spider mites, for white flies, anything that your houseplants might have got on them during the summertime, to go ahead and take care of those before you bring them in for the winter. Because you may have had some natural control on those pests, and you might not see very many of them, but once you bring them inside the house, those natural pests, those natural predators that have been keeping them under control outside, will not have that opportunity to do it once you bring them inside, because they won't have access to your inside. So that means your aphids and your white flies, your spider mites, they can just balloon quickly once you bring the plants inside. So just scout your plants, make sure you don't bring any unwanted pest inside the house for the wintertime.
A lot of good information, Johnny, you have given out in this about 50-minute time frame. Good job on that. If you do have some questions for Johnny that he wasn't able to mention today because he didn't know about it, that you had that particular question, just call him 336-599-1195, or you can call the Granville office at 919-603-1350. And leave Johnny a message about what you're wanting to know, and he will get back with you with the answer that you need. But now, just bear in mind that Johnny's a busy man, so if you call him now and he doesn't call you back within an hour, he's got a lot going on. So just bear with him, and he will get in touch with you. Sure will.
And Rob, I don't mind people reminding me to call them back either. That is fine, because I sometimes don't get the things as timely as I would like to, because of other issues that might come up. But please, if at some point you contact me and you don't hear back from me, feel free to you can poke the bear. So that'll be fine.
Poke the bear. I like that. Special thanks to T.G. Brooks Company, Samlin Golf Cars and Trailers, Granville Hunt Farm, and Jason Acock Auctioneering. A big thank you to all of our listeners, and a thank you to Mr. Johnny Coley of the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Service. Johnny, thank you for what you do. You and all the other agents, we greatly appreciate it.
96.7 WKRX.